was in a small airplane, and all of a sudden, the engine on the wing caught fire. It exploded, and burning oil was poured all over the right side of the airplane, and we started to dive toward the earth. We were spinning down to our death. Oh, this woman across the aisle, I just was so sorry for her. She was just absolutely uncontrollably hysterical. And I was calm. I was totally calm. Even though I knew I was going down to my death, I was ready to meet my maker. We didn't crash. We didn't die. The spiral dive extinguished the flame. The pilot got control and started the other engine up. And we made an emergency landing out in the field. But I thought through that experience, if you've got a faith, you can handle difficulties, knowing that with an eternal perspective that all will be well. In Luke 21, the earth shall be in distress, nations with perplexity, the seas and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear. What we're seeing is a prediction that in these latter days, people will be afraid. Men's hearts are failing, and that includes women, because they forget their identity and their purpose. Heartaches will come. I've lived through the death of a wife and the death of a daughter. I've seen the troubles that divorce brings. Children or grandchildren go astray. Disability, illness, injuries. To the individual who is weak in the heart, fearful in the heart, be patient with yourself. Perfection comes not in this life, but in the next life. Don't demand things that are unreasonable, but demand of yourself improvement. As you let the Lord help you through that, He will make the difference. I'm so grateful for the gospel of Jesus Christ that allows me that kind of strength in these tumultuous times.
Like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Well, you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
All right, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is April 1st, April Fool's Day. And I never even noticed that stuff till you get on Facebook or something and you wind up reading all these silly things about April Fool's Day. So I don't really pay much attention to that. But it's Wednesday. Obviously, Amy wasn't here earlier today, never is on Wednesdays. And I'm pretty much on time for a Wednesday. That's pretty good. The only reason is because I didn't do my Boy Scout duties tonight because I had to run pick Amy up. And so it just interfered, and I wasn't able to take care of things. So here I am, on time. So, today's one of those days. We had a discussion today on Facebook, me and B2 Basic and a couple others. And it was an interesting discussion, although it was much longer than it needed to be. So, V2 Basic, wow, you are in trouble, no doubt about it. But it was a lot longer than it needed to be because I think that we were on the same sheet of music and saying basically the same thing. And what started it all was a discussion. B2 Basic said something about the separation of church and state. And I said, well, that's a myth. There is no such thing. And she, I believe, kind of misunderstood what I was saying, meaning that I think if I can find that again... I think there's a, let me look and see if I can find that. It turned into a great big long, great big long deal. It was fun though, and it was all civil and squared away, so. And I can't find it. Let me look here one more time. But anyway, what it amounted to... Oh, I see what it says. I said there's no such thing as a separation of church and state. It's a myth. At one time, and one time only, and by any of the founders that I can find anyway, as far as I can tell, is there was a letter written by, and I think it was Thomas Jefferson. So I said that separation of church and state. Now, that doesn't mean that I believe, and I said this a little bit later. You know, I said that it's nothing more than a term used to refer to the meaning of the wording of the First Amendment and doesn't have any legal bearing on anything. And so, and I had the separation of church and state in quotes, meaning that that term doesn't mean anything. So... and then she says, well, there's, and I think we're talking about the same thing. It's the only reason I'm using her name because I'm not throwing her under the bus here. And I think it'll all come to fruition here in a minute. But, she said based on intent prior to the Constitution. Well, to me, then all bets are off because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Constitution now and how it affects us to this day. And hang on a second. But in the early days before our Constitution, there were executions in this country, in what is now the United States. There were a number of them, actually. And that was due to several religions and jurisdictions there, I can't actually say states yet, but that didn't believe the way we believe now. If you were not part of a certain church, the Quakers, a lot of the Quakers were executed. I don't know about a lot, but some of them were. And then I found at least one instance where the Quakers executed somebody else. And then the guy that started the very first Baptist church actually went and I believe he's the guy that I think that's the reason that Rhode Island exists today, was to get away from that kind of stuff. So it was pretty much in turmoil over that topic for a little while, until the founding fathers got together and they all sat down and said, look, this is not the way it should be. If we are truly free people, if we believe that people have the right to choose for themselves and that they actually have personal rights not granted to them by government but by God, then they should be able to do whatever they want to do. As long as it's not hurting anybody else, it doesn't matter. And that's been my contention all along, and that's why I've talked about pagans and atheists and stuff. I have not a thing in the world against pagans and atheists. We talked about this the other night. I wish they would come over to our side of the fence, but that doesn't change my opinion of them as people. What gets me is the amount of Christians that get out there and talk bad, hateful, dirty bad about pagans and atheists, like they're something lower than life, which to me makes that particular Christian lower than what he's claiming that the pagan is. I don't like that. So, let me look and see what we got going on in the chat room. I noticed a couple of new names there. Thunder57 joined us. That's good. You're getting to be. Matrim's back. Kangaroo Joey. I don't know that I've seen you. We got Anonymous starting to pour in there. And, looks like a lot of the basics. Kojo's here. I don't see you very often. And, alright, here we go. So, as the conversation went on, then B2 Basic kept posting things from way back yonder, the five documents of the Constitution, like I didn't agree with her that the government had no business in religion. And I come out and said that, absolutely, they do not have any business in our religion in any manner. But what I said was that the term, what I was saying, and this is hard to talk about on a forum when you can't see people's eyes and hear their voice inflection and whatnot. But the separation of church and state, in and of itself, as a term, means nothing more than the separation of church and guns, or the separation of the church and speech. It by itself means nothing, because you keep hearing people, they tell you can't post the Ten Commandments in front of a courthouse or something. They say it's a violation of church and state. They don't even know. It's a violation of the First Amendment, not of any imaginary, mythical law or policy or right or anything else called the separation of church and state. And that's all I was making the point about, is that there is no such thing or no such legal binding in that term. And it can be said you can apply that in some manner to just about all of the Bill of Rights. But to make sure that we understand each other, I will very much... What brought this up was that someone said that there was too many churches that had no gun sign or laws. Anyway, he didn't say anything about the churches other than that there were states having laws that banned carrying prohibited guns in church, which I don't understand that either. Now, there's a difference. Then we get into the whole thing about whether we're going to go to that church or not. Okay, there's a big difference between whether a state creates this law and enforces it, and whether or not a church has that policy and enforces it, regardless of state law. So there's quite a bit of difference there. If a state enforces that, or if it's state law, then what the heck? So what? You carry concealed. Nobody cares. The church may or may not care. If the church cares, then, you know, you carry concealed, and so what? You go there to listen to the gospel, not for any other, or shouldn't be for any other reason. So, if they don't, what they don't know, don't hurt them. Now, this sounds like it's kind of a conflict with what I say about businesses sometimes. I say with businesses, I will not, they say, just like Costco. Well, just carry concealed. So what? They'll never know. I don't care if they know. What I care about is my money is being spent there, and they are an anti-gun, anti-rights establishment, and I'm paying to keep them in business to violate my rights. How stupid is that? But churches are not businesses. Well, they shouldn't be. If your church is a business, you probably ought to find another church. But again, that's entirely up to you and what you think of your church. Not going to the church doesn't hurt anything. It doesn't change their status. It might mean a little bit less in the tip jar there, plate, whatever you call it. But other than that, it doesn't matter. So I don't mind. It doesn't bother me to go to Matrim. No, our church does not have a no gun policy. There's a long story behind that, and it's only in Utah. So, me not going there doesn't change anything of that, so I don't mind carrying concealed if the church was to say not to. Now, if your church has come right out and said, and I think that she said that her church said, don't come back if you're going to carry a gun. Well, I can certainly accommodate you there. That's not going to be happening. If that's your attitude, then I won't be back. And that's exactly what I'm saying right now, be too basic, because the church does not put yourself and your children at risk. All they do is say, don't bring your guns in. So if you carry concealed, who cares? They don't know. So even if they have armed security, that wouldn't do it for me, because the armed security can't be everywhere all the time and check everything unless there's an armed guard for every person. Roger, I'm glad to see you in here tonight, but if your Costco has a sign that allows concealed carry, somebody at that Costco is disobeying their written corporate policy that applies to all Costcos nationwide, and that is no guns. So if they've put one up, it was on their own, and obviously corporate hasn't caught it yet, because the overall policy is no guns, period, and they will refund your membership dues, and you're invited to leave, no exceptions. So, but anyway, the church doesn't put me and my children at risk unless they were to frisk me or go through a metal detector at the door. Then I don't care. What are they going to do? Kick me out? It's fine. Kick me out. Go find another church. Now, I'm saying this in the first person here. It doesn't matter to me because my church doesn't have that policy. But if a church or any business says that they prefer that you not carry in there, well, that's fine. You can prefer all you want. I will, out of respect. I may, unless I'm really trying to rub their nose in it and rub salt in the wound for some reason, out of respect and courtesy and decency and professionalism, if they prefer that I don't, then I will carry concealed. Them preferring that I don't is not the same as banning me completely. Now, in some places, it depends on the state. You can go to some places, and if they have a sign that says no guns, it does not have the force of law
It means nothing. And, Roger, that's fine. That doesn't change what I said. Costco still has a corporate policy, so no matter how many of them there have a sign, Costco has a written policy that says none, unless there's somewhere an exception for North Texas, but that doesn't change their policy. And, you know, okay. Hold on a minute. Goodness. Tried to eat too fast and get in here on time. And I made it, but it's killing me. If they're gonna set up metal detectors and stuff and keep me from going there, that's fine. If they have signs, in many states those signs do not have the force of law. In other states, you have to have state prescribed signs. It has to be worded just right and look just right, just like it does here in Arizona. And in other states, or well, let's say if you enter a state that has prescribed signs, then if they put up anything other than prescribed signs, it does not have the force of law. It means that if you violate that and they ask you to leave and you don't, then you're guilty of trespassing, not carrying a gun. And in New Mexico, for instance, all they got to do is take a paper plate and write no guns in ketchup on the paper plate and stick it to the door on with a piece of chewing gum, and that means no guns, and you are in violation if you enter the building. So, and there's always the arguments of putting them where people can see them and all that, which is all common sense. But anyway, B2 Basic, I'm with you 100%. It was the term itself that doesn't mean anything to me and shouldn't mean anything to anybody else other than helping you to describe what the part of the First Amendment is for. We can say that the Second Amendment is, in order to describe that to someone, the Second Amendment describes the separation of church and arms. And the other part of the First Amendment there is separation of church and speech. So the terms are not legally binding in and of themselves. But anyway, and Matrim, I don't know who you are, but I think I may have seen you in here one time. I'm glad you made it in tonight. So glad to see you posting in there. Walmart's and Sam's Club sign policy is exactly that. You're right. Whatever state law is in the state that they're in, that's what they're supposed to do. And that's common sense. I have no problem with that. Yeah, that's right. Texas has what they call the 30-06 sign, the 30.06 sign. And if their sign does not written and posted in that manner, then it does not have the force of law. The worst they can do is get you for trespassing. So, anyway, I think that, I've said enough on that. It's, let's say if I were to choose a little country church to go to sometime, and they have a sign on the door. And another thing that came up in that discussion is open carrying in church. I think that is, it's a church. It's not a cafe. It's not Walmart. And I am personally disinclined to, what should I say, to worry people or disrespect, just out of courtesy, I wouldn't carry openly in church. I carry in church every single time that I go, which is pretty much every Sunday. I rarely miss one unless I'm off somewhere teaching a class or something. But if I'm here, I never miss one. And I never, ever go unarmed. But I will not even attempt to carry openly. Now, if I go by the church for something, you know, when church is not on, I just need to go by and pick somebody up or something like that. I carry openly. Nobody cares. But I'm not going to do it when during services. I just don't think that's the thing to do. Sometimes I think we get so involved in this fight that I think there's times that we we push a little farther than we should and get past... Matrim, okay, I got you. I know who you are now. I'm sorry about that. I should have thought about that. But I'm glad you joined us. Sometimes I think we push a little too hard. And I'm not saying that there's a time ever that we should compromise. I will say that there is times when that being respectful or showing courtesy is not compromising. If I decide not to carry somewhere or not to carry openly or something, it would be because I'm being respectful, not because I am worried about what they say, not because I'm worried about... Hang on a second. I got dogs going nuts out here. Oh, never mind. That's, I see what it is. Okay. and to tinker, that's right. I should post a deal. Actually, you can go to my blog and you can read a thing. Go to theshootingbench.info and scroll down there a little ways and you can read a deal that I wrote, said why I carry openly. And it kind of explains all this. You know, if I go to a restaurant or, you know, wherever, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference. And I'm carrying openly, and people don't like it in there, then go to another restaurant. But a church is a church. A church is a little bit different. It's like in New Mexico, it's against the law to carry into or anywhere around a school. It's a fourth degree felony above and beyond federal charges. But it's not against the law to carry in the Boys and Girls Club. But I don't carry in the Boys and Girls Club when I used to go pick up my kids there because I didn't see the point in it. If I carried in there, I carried concealed. I just throw a jacket or a vest on when I got out of the truck and go in there because I didn't want to cause the panic. I didn't want there to be legislation that comes up that changed that. Same with theaters and every place else. There's times that doesn't change my thoughts on the Second Amendment. It doesn't change my views or the way I do things, the way I say things, the places I go. It doesn't change anything. It just means that sometimes I think that we can show a little respect for the people that we're around, whether sometimes they don't believe the way we believe it. Yeah, it probably does make them sheep. It does not make them stupid. It does not make them morons. It does not make them anything other than different beliefs. Hang on just a second. You know, I got to take a real short break here. Well, I don't know if it'll be real short, but whatever it is, I'm still going to take a break. So I'll be right back. Hang on with me just a minute.
Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. what I said. James is darn good. But he's better. And I'm better than both of them. No brag, just fact.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Corp Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me
there. All right. We're back, and I think we've covered that pretty well, and I think that B2 Basic and I were saying the same thing, and she kind of got off track there and trying to convince me that there was a separation of church and state, and there is. It's just that that wasn't what I was talking about. So we got that all squared away, and I'm glad. So anyway, let's... Let's see. She says we were asked not to come back to the church. We were concealed carry. We were not the only ones who carried to the church, but what happened was one of the elders' children was a bully and was being mean to one of our daughters. I had to talk to the mom. She asked that she have her daughter quit. When that didn't work, Tampico went to the dad. When he did, the dad had the attitude. Tamp told him, basically, let's go outside and I'll show you what it feels like to be bullied. And... they used him having a weapon as excuse for us to leave the church. Okay, well that I understand what you're saying there, and looking at it now, the Tinker said something up there earlier. He changed two letters in a word that he said, which changes everything. He initially said he don't want to spook the sheep, and then he said I wasn't knocking you. We just don't want to spook the meek. Okay. And that should change the whole aspect of this a little bit. And that's how come I say that the way B2 Basic explained that there. I understand why you're not going there and why you don't like that anymore, okay? I also understand why they said what they said. Something, and when I said a while ago that sometimes we get so involved in this that we forget that other people have rights and attitudes and thoughts that are different than ours. And that it's in this particular case, in this church, maybe we could reword that as the meek rather than the stupid or the moronic or the retards or whatever. Because some people just don't believe the way that we do. They may believe in rights, but they don't want to exercise them. They haven't been educated in the way of the gun, and they see it strictly as a killing machine, a dangerous thing, and kids shouldn't be around it. So I understand their point. I don't agree with it. I agree with your point. But I also understand how they think. And as sheepdogs, I think we need to try to understand sometimes that everybody's not a sheepdog. Everybody doesn't have our mindset. Everybody is never going to have our mindset. That's why a lot of people are going to die. That's why a lot of women are going to be raped. That's why a lot of kids are going to be killed. That's why a lot of men are going to stand by and watch their women be raped and their kids be killed because they can't do anything about it. Or won't. So that leaves us with the Tampico Scout kilt corner, son. That leaves us with the task of when it's possible without putting ourselves in jeopardy, it leaves us with the task of helping to protect the meek. And yeah, Tinker is right. The meek shall inherit the earth, but there's no reason we should have them inherited any earlier than they have to. So, and I'm like a long slide there. I am armed absolutely from the time I get up to the time I go. I'm armed all the time I'm in bed. Because the gun's right there. It's 9 inches from my head. I choose my nightstands and position when I move to a new house or something. I put all this stuff in such a way. Not only do I dress around my gun, I arrange my furniture around the mindset that I may have to get up and challenge somebody, greet somebody in the middle of the night. The way that the curtains are, the way that everything is based around the fact that I am in that defensive mindset every waking moment of my life. And some people just don't have that. And we can say that the people at these churches, the people at... look at a good example of this. No, never mind. It's not a good example. It's a stupid example, so forget it. All right. Well, if we were to take this a step further, aside from our rabid... I can't think here what I'm trying to say. But aside from our rabid application of our rights, aside from doing it just because we can, and that's a poor excuse for anybody to do anything simply because you can, but usually there's some other reason. We say that when we're, and I do the same thing when we talk to people. Why do you carry a gun? Same reason a dog licks himself, I guess, just because he can. But that's not the reason I carry a gun. I carry a gun for self-defense, and it's that simple. But we always have we're always quicker to have a smart aleck answer to someone that may not deserve that. Maybe they really do want to know. Maybe they would carry a gun if they knew that they could, or had any reason to believe that they should. So that takes us to the fact that, or the question, as Christians, are we even supposed to carry guns? Well, that gets into quite the discussion there. So, if you kind of start at the beginning and work your way forward in Genesis, that's where we read about the first murder. And we can speculate that Cain used a weapon of some kind, because there were references there that Abel was bleeding. When he talked about him bleeding into the ground and all that. But it doesn't say what kind of a weapon he used. He didn't institute any kind of club control or rock control or anything. What did he do? He punished the one that committed the crime. That's how you do that. You can read that in Genesis 4 somewhere. In Exodus, in there it says that the Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. And there's numerous places in Scripture that references that God was not a pacifist. Quite the opposite in a few places. Jesus himself, we remember turning the tables over and had his whip and all that in the book of John. Anybody can be pushed to a point, even Jesus. And what did it say in Revelations? It says that he is a king that does what? He judges and makes war. God implemented the Ten Commandments in Exodus. No mention of weapons anywhere, so there's nothing saying that we're not supposed to have or use weapons. It just says that you're not supposed to kill. Which most people translate that correctly as being murder. Also in Exodus it says that there's if a thief is found breaking into your house, that he shall be smitten. I love that word, smitten. he shall be smitten that he die. There will be no bloodshed for him. And he be smitten that he die. There will be no bloodshed for him. Meaning that you're not guilty of murder. This is one of quite a few passages that made it clear to me that we have quite literally a God-given right to defend not just ourselves and our families, but your home. Because it said if there's a thief found breaking into your house and he be smitten that he die, there'll be no bloodshed for him. For him, not by him. In Deuteronomy, talks about rape. Now, I take most of this as being pretty literal and easy to understand. So if you look in Deuteronomy, it says, what do you think is meant by the words that there was no one there to save her? That's at the end of verse 27, 22, 27. The implication there is that if someone had been around to hear her to cry out, that they had a moral duty to intervene and protect her. The exact quote out there said, but there was no one to save her. So not only do we have a God-given right in my mind, we are directed by God to defend not only ourselves, but others as well. That's why I said a while ago, these sheep, these meek people, I feel like that it is my duty and responsibility not to say, well, they should have carried a gun. That's not my problem. I think it is my problem. I think it is my responsibility to help these people when I can, providing that it doesn't that it doesn't put yourself or your family or anyone else at risk. Yeah, Tampico Scout, I guess. Come on out of the corner. That's right. I'm going back here. I got to check the chat room once in a while. You guys get way ahead of me when I'm looking at other stuff. Kit, I've never, you know, you'll never, likely never hear anyone in our church say that. Or you say the big thing you hear from way too many Christians is that the founders were sinning simply by revolting. We believe that the founders were divinely inspired to do what they did. And that the act of them revolting was not only justified but required. Not only allowed by God but directed by inspiration for them to do what they did. So I I agree with you in what you're saying there. That would drive me crazy too. Let's see. Let me scroll on down here a little bit and we'll get back to the discussion. We're probably going to run a little bit over time tonight, but that's okay. You can sell your cloak, but you'll never get our kilts. Oh, boy. Roger, that's right. If I had a 1911, we'd have never talked about that dog thing a while ago. That would have been a whole lot different. So, anyway. Kojo, there's nothing wrong with kilts whatsoever. I think they look fine on a woman. I don't have no problem with them. But, anyway. Okay, let me get back to what we were saying. I got people messaging me all over the place here. I'm going to have a busy night after I finish the show here. So, in Numbers, it said, this is pretty much what the founding fathers of our country envisioned for us is an armed citizenry, not a standing army. That, let's see here if I can find that here. I'm not as quick on the draw here as I used to be. There we go. It says that, let me find the one that I'm referencing here, if I can find it. I'm looking. Give me time. Give me a second. Yeah, maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree here. It said that, and those that were numbered of them, even the tribe of Reuben, were 46,000. That's not what I'm looking for. Of the children of Gad, by their generations after their families, by the house of their fathers, according to the number of their names, from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war. Those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Gad, were 45,650. I should have had all this out and going. I didn't know we were going here tonight, so I wasn't prepared. I'm sorry about that. Well, I'm wasting time looking for it here. It's in here somewhere. But anyway, of all these families and all these tribes and different people they're putting together, they're establishing the policies here, the rules to go by, the kind of, not the rules of engagement, but the establishing the people that are qualified that should be going off to war. Let's see. Well, heck with it. I've wasted enough time already. So let's don't do that anymore. Okay. In 1 Samuel, it says, this is a very, very interesting passage. It says that after the Philistines had disarmed the Israelites, now listen to this. This is so relevant to what's going on right now that it's astonishing. The very words there said that there were no smiths were allowed so that the Israelites could not make weapons for themselves. They could not make weapons. The first sword control had been instituted in Samuel 13:19 through 22. It says, now there was no smith found throughout the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, let the Hebrews make them swords or spears. But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share and his coulter and his axe and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks and for the coulters and for the forks and for the axes and to sharpen the goads. So it came to pass in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and with Jonathan, his son was there found. So the first sword control had been implemented in 1 Samuel. But in Psalms 82, it says that we should defend. People use this. I've used it many times to talk about our duty to defend people. It says we are to defend the poor and fatherless and do justice to the afflicted and the needy. David said in verse 1 of Psalm 144, blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. Then he turned around and said in verse 2, the same Psalm 144, may loving kindness and my fortress, my high tower and my deliverer, my shield and one in whom I take refuge. And so on down the line throughout Scripture, we see things like this. Isaiah, many people take that part of verse 4 that says they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks and try to say that God wants us to disarm. It seems clear to me that swords will be beaten into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks when God himself rules, not when any other government tells us to. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, or some such thing. That can be found in a number of scriptures. Look at, I think it's in Romans, some Proverbs, probably a couple more. if we witness the commission of a violent crime, do we not have a God-given right and responsibility to deal with it? If it's already happened, now this is one of those things where to go right back to what I just said. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, not saith me. If it's already happened, we have no God-given right, no responsibility to seek revenge and execute judgment. Now, we have a right, if we can, to pursue a fleeing felon, to stop a fleeing felon. But we don't go door to door hunting them down if it's already happened. Not only is it against the law in most places, it's against what God tells us to do. If we can go door to door and find the guy and take him into custody and take him in, that's okay. If during this action he attacks us and we have to defend ourselves, well, yes, that's okay, but yes, you're also going to have to really come up with some convincing talk to make sure that you can convince the magistrate or the jury or whatever, district attorney, that this was justifiable, that they're going to say that you went looking for trouble. And in large fashion, they'd be right. If God deems that necessary, then God will judge and carry out vengeance as he sees fit, not us. In Matthew, some try to say that this passage proves in 26, 51 and 52. Some try to say that this proves that Jesus was a pacifist and against guns or swords, as it were, in those days. And I think it's quite the contrary. Where does Jesus tell Peter to put his sword? After, remember when Peter cut the soldier's ear off? Well, yeah, I'm with Peter. I think he did the right thing. But Jesus didn't tell him to put it down, to throw it away, give it to me. He said, put it in its place. And John makes it clear when Jesus said to Peter, put your sword into the sheath. You can find that in John 18:11. Jesus didn't tell him to melt it down into a plowshare. Rather, he said, put it into its sheath. The sword has its proper place. It's not an evil thing, just like the gun. But Peter wanted to use it in an improper manner at an improper time. Now, what Peter probably didn't understand too well or didn't want to accept is that Jesus came to earth to die. That was the whole thing. So what Peter was doing there at that point was conflicting. His thoughts and his actions were in conflict with the purposes of God if he were to intervene at that point with the sword. Could he have prevented that Jesus being killed? No. He could have delayed it, changed some things around that may have been worse, but that wasn't about to happen because Jesus was there and he knew what was supposed to be done, what he was supposed to be doing. So here's something that always comes up when you get into discussion with people. Someone wants to live by the sword, they'll surely die by the sword. Jesus said that. In other words, what that means is he who uses the sword, here I am talking like, if you use the sword improperly, that you will surely die by it. And we see this with, look at, I'll have to call her back in a little bit. We see this with lots and lots and lots and lots and lots, overwhelmingly with bad guys out there. They live by the sword, they die by the sword. Or by the gun. So, if what Peter did was wrong at that point, but he acted on emotion. This was not living by the sword. This was a one-time action that he was mildly, gently reprimanded for, and that was the end of it. But a criminal or a tyrant, as we say, who does this improperly and regularly will rightly die by the sword or by the gun. But the use of the sword in its proper fashion, or gun, to defend yourself, your family, your country, is not condemned by Scripture anyway, but upholds it and supports it in many places. God or Jesus, neither one, were what you would call a pacifist, as many people would have you believe. Were they gentle, kind, understanding, forgiving? Absolutely, as we should be. But in, as Jesus said in the very next verse after that, in verse 53 of Matthew 26, he said, "Or do you not think that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels?" Meaning he didn't need any help. If he'd wanted it, he could have said, "Look, Dad, I'm in a little bit of a bind here. Could you send me some help?" And surely it would have happened. But the use of force at that time was not appropriate. And in that situation, he was supposed to die. That's why he came here. He didn't use force because he had to abide by what God sent him here for. So if we try to bring this to an end here, when someone says that you shouldn't have guns, we should trust in God. My answer to that is, let me ask you, do you have a lock on your front door? Well, yeah. Do you lock it when you leave or go to bed? Well, of course. Especially people live in the city. And I say, why do you lock the door? Won't you just trust in God? I'll go back to my fire extinguisher thing. Won't you just trust in God? House on fire, God, would you put it out for me? I don't need a fire extinguisher. I don't know. I'm a good Christian. So would you hurry, please? No, just because you have your lock on your door, or fire extinguisher in the hallway, or gun in the closet, doesn't mean that we are trusting in them to protect us. We're trusting in the good judgment and inspiration that we have to do the right thing at the right time. We see the wisdom, the prudence of having these things in order to protect our body, to be good stewards over what we were blessed with protecting with our families and whatnot. So there you have it. I don't get off on that wide of a tangent there too often, but that was just one of those things today. I thought that maybe we'd get a little deeper in this and see what happened. So let's Kojo says next time he sees me, he plans on wearing his kilt. Well, that's okay. That's all right for you. That's why we live in a free country, I reckon. But next time I see you, I will not be wearing my kilt, rest assured. So I'm going to go down here through here real quick and see if I can see anything that I need to touch on before I leave that happened in the... Kit says it's not the kilt, it's what's not underneath it. If you will, they wear the kilt traditionally. Well, I won't even go there. Let me see. X Beast, I don't know who you are or where you came from, but we're glad you joined us tonight anyway. Let me move this deal up here just a little bit so I can see all my settings and stuff. There we go. And Sue can't get over the dog deal there. Let's see. Let me check and see. Why am I not getting... Here we go. Nope. Stuff is not disappearing like it's supposed to. There it goes. All right. I'm scrolling very quickly down through the chat room here. The Kit says, one more comment. This is from Western Rifle Shooters. The game is simply advance to contact and then dare them to shoot you dead. If they shoot, you're a martyr. If they don't, they are impotent. I don't think I need to start discussing that right now, but anyway. All right. Well, I've had all the fun I can stand. I hope I didn't run too many of you off with my discussion here, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, and we'll see you tomorrow night. Wait. Stop. Kit, put your show URL, your site, in the chat room before you leave, if you haven't left already. And I will be on in all of my splendor and glory, or, well, maybe not so much. But anyway, I'll be on with Kit on the Patrick Henry Society tomorrow night at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock Pacific time. And I think that we're going to talk about militia and whatever else happens to come up. We've only got an hour, so it's going to be a fast hour, I can tell you that. So anyway, hope you all join us for that. That doesn't interfere with any of our shows here, so I have no problem with anybody going over there and listening to that show. XB said we met at the rally in Olympia in December. Oh, okay. All right. I remember who you are. I remember that now. Okay. Good deal. Well, I'm glad you made it in here tonight anyway. Okay. And there's Kit just put her URL in there. I hope y'all will join us at 4 o'clock tomorrow. And then we'll see you later. I've got people messaging me from every direction here, so I need to go take care of that. Good night. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.